translation. That most obedient wife thus fell down at the feet of her dead husband and began to cry pitifully in that solitary forest. Thus the tears rolled down from her eyes. Purport. Just as a devoted wife becomes afflicted in the passing away of her husband, at the passing away of her husband, when the spiritual master passes away, the disciple becomes similarly bereaved. Om Agyanati Miranda Sajana Anjana Salakaya Chakshura Nuritam Jena Sasmai Shri Gurudeva Namah Sri Chaitanya Manovistam Stapitam Jena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Padamayam Dadati Sabarantiham. This metaphor has many similes and analogies. This one is comparing the wife's relationship with her husband to that of the disciple and the spiritual master. In Vedic culture, the wife is the disciple of the husband is the spiritual master of the wife. So this is the symbology being used here. And when the spiritual master departs this world, the disciple becomes very grievously afflicted and sheds tears. It's due to the departure of the material body, but at the same time, the disciple also feels, after some time, that the relationship between him and the spiritual master is continuing. And actually, it's increasing. In the material world, those who identify with the body, they become very distraught at the loss of a loved one. And because they see that the body and is what I am, they see that I am the body. And therefore, if one loses a loved one, then it is like the end. And sometimes we've even heard of instances where a wife will go to the graveyard and cry at the tombstone of her dead husband and asking God to bring him back, thinking that there's still life there somehow in that dead body. So in the material world, identifying with the body, as soon as there is bereavement of a loved one, grief is very intense and it takes a long time to get over such bereavement, sometimes years. But we know that since the soul is actually different from the body, that this soul has a destiny that is meted out to it according to its life and its karma by Yamaraj, and especially in relationship with the spiritual master. Prabhupada discusses it in some of the purports in this chapter, that the relationship actually increases after the departure of the spiritual master's demise of his material body. Prabhupada also discusses this at the end, the afterword of the Srimad, of the Chaitanya Chaitamrita. There's a description of the difference between Vani and Vapu. And he explains there that during the presence of the spiritual master, when we are associating with him in his Vapu form, we don't have as deep an appreciation as we do when we are worshipping the spiritual master in separation. And that separation is very acute, very intense after the departure of the spiritual master's body. The demise of the body and his departure for the spiritual world, because one tends to take the presence of the spiritual master for granted when he's present in his Vapu form. But this is not actually what makes the relationship strong. There's an instance in which Srila Prabhupada was explaining to one devotee. He was in India, in Delhi. And Jamuna told me this. She was sitting in the front of Prabhupada during the lectures, right in front, and somehow some people there objected in India. So she was told that she had to sit near the back because that was the custom in India. So she asked Prabhupada, why is this so? And she said, I feel deprived of your presence. I feel I'm not so close with you. So Srila Prabhupada said that the king has many servants and followers, but they're not necessarily important according to where exactly they're situated. And then he said that the king is sitting on his big throne, and sometimes a mosquito comes and sits on the same throne. And all the time the king is thinking, when is this mosquito going to go away from us? It's going to bite me. So my point is, he was saying that physical presence is not necessarily a sign of intimacy with the spiritual master. So similarly, after the departure of the spiritual master and the demise of the material body, the disciple's love for him increases and increases, and actually becomes more intense than when the spiritual master is physically present. This is known as vani. And Prabhupada explains in that afterword of the Chaitanya Charitamrita that this vani is actually greater than vapu, because one worships the spiritual master with intense yearning, longing, and separation. When Krishna was with the gopis, sometimes he would disappear from their sight to make their love for him stronger. So in this form of the relationship between Radha and Krishna, or Parvati Ras, when Krishna is away and there is worship and separation, it is much more intense than when Krishna is there. We tend to take the spiritual master for granted when he is physically present. Nonetheless, when the spiritual master departs this material body, the disciples cry and in great grief. But actually this crying is another form of intense love and deep relationship with Krishna. This crying is actually another form of expression of love, and it's also a form of unity with the spiritual master. When in the material world people cry for the departure or the presence of a loved one who's far away, it is a type of bereavement that has no cure. It's simply grief. But in the spiritual world, crying for Krishna, or in the absence of the spiritual master, crying for his presence, that is transcendental ecstasy of the highest order. And that's not, it's not only non-different from having the presence of the spiritual master, but it's even greater than having presence of the spiritual master. So as Prabhupada writes in this chapter, in his purports, one who carries out the order of the spiritual master is entering into the most intimate association with the spiritual master. There's a picture that I saw in the temple in Munich of Srila Vishnupad presenting some books to the Murti of Srila Prabhupada at the farm in Germany. And this is, of course, after Srila Prabhupada departed, and I was thinking what a wonderful picture this is. Here's a disciple worshipping a spiritual master, Srila Kshetra, giving him a presentation of a big stack of books, and he looked so happy and so blissful. And I was thinking how wonderful this is, that he's worshipping Prabhupada in separation and pleasing Prabhupada, who's accepting this offering very much so, even though he's not physically there in his material body. But still he's accepting this nice offering. And this is evidence of how the spiritual master's instructions continue after he leaves this planet, and how one can gain deeper and deeper realizations and love for the spiritual master even after he has left this material world. And this type of worship of the spiritual master in his absence by carrying out his instructions is the essence of love for the spiritual master and Krishna. Prabhupada also, long after his spiritual master left, was so dedicated to carrying out his spiritual master's orders that he was never feeling vacant or the absence of his spiritual master. There's one famous incident when Vishnu John asked Prabhupada, he said, don't you miss your spiritual master sometimes? Don't you miss him? And Prabhupada was lecturing with this big Srimad Bhagavatam in front of him. He immediately lifted the Bhagavatam and touched it to his head, and he said, my spiritual master and I are never more separated than this. So in other words, by carrying out the orders of the Parampara, to preach in the English language, Srimad Bhagavatam, Prabhupada was feeling no separation. In fact, he was feeling great mercy of Srila Prabhupada, the presence of Srila Prabhupada. So the presence of the spiritual master is felt by carrying out his instructions, even if he's far away or if he's departed this material world. So this crying is a kind of ecstasy, longing for the spiritual master. And by executing the orders of the spiritual master, we feel the presence of the spiritual master very strongly. Just as Srila Prabhupada made a very specific instruction, he made many instructions, but he emphasized how much distributing the knowledge of Krishna consciousness through his books was the thing that gave him the most pleasure. And by carrying out that order, by distributing more books than when Srila Prabhupada was even here, we don't feel that Srila Prabhupada is away We don't feel that he has gone away, that he is absent, but this is going to act again. We feel his presence here stronger and stronger and stronger because he's pleased. And Janme Janme Prabhushe, our relationship with the spiritual master is eternal. So it goes on continuously. And the same is true of all the masters in the disciplic succession. We have an eternal relationship with all of these spiritual masters. So to carry out their order is to develop more and more intimate association with them. So I'm going to read another verse. Text 50. Chitam daru mayin chitta tasyam patyu kalevaram adipya chanumarane pilapanti manodade. She then prepared a blazing fire with firewood and placed the dead body of her husband upon it. When this was finished, she lamented severely and prepared herself to perish in the fire with her husband. Purport. It is the long-standing tradition of the Vedic system that a faithful wife dies along with her husband. This is called Sahamarana. In India, this system was prevalent even to the date of British occupation. At that time, however, a wife did not wish to die with her husband, was sometimes forced to do so by her relatives. Formerly, that was not the case. The wife used to enter the fire voluntarily. The British government stopped this practice, considering it inhuman. However, from the early history of India, we find that when Maharaj Pandu died, he was survived by two wives, Madri and Kunti. The question was whether both should die or one should die. After the death of Maharaj Pandu, his wife settled that one should remain and the other should go. Madri would perish with her husband in the fire, and Kunti would remain to take charge of the five Pandava children. Even as late as 1936, we saw a devoted wife voluntarily enter the fire of her husband. This indicates that a devotee's wife must be prepared to act in such a way. Similarly, a devoted disciple of the spiritual master would rather die with the spiritual master than fail to execute the spiritual master's mission. As the Supreme Personality of Godhead comes down upon this earth to reestablish the principles of religion, so his representative, the spiritual master, also comes to reestablish religious principles. It is the duty of the disciples to take the charge of the mission of the spiritual master and execute it properly. Otherwise, the disciple should decide to die along with the spiritual master. In other words, to execute the will of the spiritual master, the disciple should be prepared to lay down his life and abandon all personal considerations. Well, Prabhupada at first talks about this sati rite of the wife entering fire along with her husband. The principle was that in Vedic culture, the wife was so attached to the husband that the fire of separation was greater than the fire of material fire, of burning. And therefore, it wasn't felt so intensely. So the purpose of this whole story is to teach us that actually we are not only not these material bodies, but they are temporary when we experience them, and that all our relationships that we experience in this material world are temporary. Prabhupada talks of the straws that are sometimes caught up in the tide of the river, in the waves of the river. They're washed into the river, and they come together for some time. They touch one another, and then they are washed away with the tide or the stream of the ocean with the current, never again to come in contact. So, as Paranjan became a woman in his next life, and then was reminded later on about this by Krishna as the super soul, one goes through many different forms of life, sometimes human beings, sometimes in female, sometimes in male bodies, sometimes in non-human bodies. Relationships are temporary. They come and they go. And according to our karma, we do not know where we will go from one place to another. We don't know whether we're going to end up as a tree or a cat or a demigod. We simply do not know. And the relationship which we do know, which we can cultivate and understand it in its everlasting form, is that of Gopi Bhartu Parta Kamala Manudas Anadas Anadas, or Jivara Swarupa Hoi Nitya Krishna Das. Our eternal relationship is as the servant of the servants of Krishna or as the servant of Krishna. That's the eternal relationship. And when that relationship is in place, or when we actually have that developed properly, then it is possible to understand the relationship, our relationship with all living entities, humans and otherwise. So it's very mysterious how we change the body. There was a story of, in the Bhagavatam we read about King Chitraketu, whose son was called Harshashoka, which means lamentation and jubilation. He was a son for which one could have jubilation, and a son for which one could lament, because he died very shortly after birth. So in all cases, all relationships are of Harshashoka. They're very happy. We have relationships. We desperately need to relate to people in this material world. The whole impetus of living in this material world is to enjoy and to relate with others. And it is also lamentation. Harsha and Ashoka. Lamentation because the relationship will end at some time, either by the death of the person, other person, or by ourselves. So King Chitraketu also became enlivened about this whole situation. He was deeply aggrieved when Narada Muni, who's also the narrator of this story, and Angira Muni came to enlighten him. He finally understood and again was returned to his natural position of happiness. First he was happy, but this happiness of his son's arrival was based on material happiness. And then he began to lament because it was based on lamentation, material lamentation. But later on, when he was enlightened about the nature of the soul, having so many different fathers and mothers, when the dead child spoke to him and said, "I've had so many millions of fathers and mothers," he began to understand that this is just a temporary position. It's a soul brought into this material world temporarily to be my son and then to go away. He began to realize that there's nothing to lament for, because this soul is actually eternal. It's not dying. It's not disintegrating, but will go on and on. And I have temporarily had the association of this soul as my son. So similarly, the wife who followed the husband lamented at the death of the husband, but was able to actually enter into fire, considering the husband as a spiritual master, and that this fire of separation was very great, and that by voluntarily giving up this material body, one could attain perfection. Now Prabhupada goes into this next chapter and compares this to not wanting to leave the body before the spiritual master. Actually, it is the desire of some disciples that they don't want to leave the body before the spiritual master, because they don't want to suffer the grief that comes by such separation. But the main point is that one has to execute the mission of the spiritual master and make that one's life and soul. As Prabhupada says here, one should be prepared to give up one's body if one cannot execute the order of the spiritual master. So this is a very serious statement, that one has to execute the spiritual master's order even at the risk of death. And it does happen that to execute the order of the spiritual master, sometimes in the service of the spiritual master, one has to die. There are instances of devotees, we know of some devotees in Russia who were imprisoned, and they were tempted, or they were, the authorities attempted to bribe them. "You give up this preaching mission and we'll let you go. You stop preaching about Krishna consciousness, we'll let you go. Or you can publicly renounce Krishna consciousness is bad, and we'll let you go. We'll let you come out of the jail or the labor camp or the insane asylum." So they were, some devotees actually died in these difficult conditions. They weren't given proper food, but they would not give up their Krishna consciousness. So such dedication to the order of the spiritual master is endears one to the spiritual master. When Prabhupada prepared for many years, he said, to execute the order of the spiritual master, he told him that he should go to that he should preach Krishna consciousness in the English language. So Prabhupada thought, to execute such a difficult order, the people in India are not so receptive. And so I'll go to New York, the most materialistic city in the world, and carry out my spiritual master's mission there. He thought and thought, Sometimes people ask him, why did you wait so long? You were given this order in 1933, you didn't go to the West until 1966. So he said, it was a very difficult task, therefore I had to prepare. So Srila Prabhupada, in the meantime, he took sannyas. He lived for 6 years in Vrindavan, in a very ascetic lifestyle. I was just reading, actually, that Prabhupada was taking two baths every day, even up until the time when he, first few years he was in America, and cold baths, he was saying, every day, at least two cold baths every day, from the beginning of his life up until that time. So he was living a very austere lifestyle, and it was also the case in Vrindavan. He was translating and publishing these books and back to Godhead, and he was personally distributing them. He was overseeing the printing, he was himself going out and distributing them, even in the very hot weather, sometimes even getting heat stroke. And then he, in his very old age, when he was, how old was he then, 67 years old, he took this difficult voyage. He had two heart attacks. And it was so cold in the winter in New York compared to what he was used to in Calcutta, that before he left, people warned him, you must not go. It is very cold. You will not survive the winter, even one winter in New York, because of his age. But Srila Prabhupada pushed on, and he was simply meditating on this one thing, that my spiritual master has given me this order to distribute Krishna consciousness in the English language. So that sustained him. Even though he was advised to go back, he was writing to India to get help from his friends in India. Nobody was writing, nobody was sending any help. Very few people were responding. He could not get any money from India. So it seemed that even though he was carrying out the order of his spiritual master, he was not successful. Nothing was happening. Nothing happened for a year, and it looked as if nothing was going to happen. In the order of the spiritual master is also the intelligence how to succeed and the potency to succeed. Even if one doesn't know how to succeed, if one simply follows blindly what the spiritual master says, doesn't understand completely how to do it or how it's going to happen, or it doesn't look like it's possible to happen, by the potency of the order, because it's coming in a clear disciple succession from Krishna, it becomes possible to execute such an order. So this is what happened with the life of Srila Prabhupada. He was able to execute this mission. This is called Guru Seva, or serving the spiritual master. It's stated in the Bhagavad Gita that one has to serve the spiritual master. Ask questions and render service. These are the two points in serving the spiritual master, to ask and serve. And to serve is to carry out the mission of the spiritual master. One should feel foolish before the spiritual master in order to understand that the words of the spiritual master are non-different from the desires of Krishna. When Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was in South Indian Benares and the Mayavadi sannyasis began to criticize him for chanting instead of studying Vedanta, he said, well, actually, I'm chanting just because my spiritual master said I was a great fool and told me to just chant. And somehow when I do this, I have these fits of ecstasy. So he was explaining that, of course, even though he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead, that he was a fool before his spiritual master. So he set that example. And of course, Krishna himself took a guru when he was here, Sanipanamuni. Of course, Lord Chaitanya had his spiritual master, and all the great acharyas. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta was very strictly following Gaura Kishore Das Babaji. He was so intelligent, Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati, materially, that it was said that whatever he heard once, he never forgot his whole life. And yet, Gaura Kishore Das Babaji was considered to be illiterate. And yet he followed him, because he was a spiritually realized soul. Mahabhagavat, and he could follow the order of the spiritual master. And it's so one has to do everything to follow this order, consider it the ultimate goal of one's life, and by Krishna's mercy one succeeds, because Krishna is behind the order of the spiritual master. He's giving a perfect instruction. In this material world, sometimes we have to, not sometimes, all the time, we have to serve somebody. But this service is always incomplete, because it's actually serving Maya. It's actually serving someone who is imperfect, and it will never be satisfactory. Because people are imperfect by nature in this material world. But Krishna is managing everything very nicely. He's managing so perfectly that all the planets are turning in orbit exactly at the right time. And all the seasons are coming just exactly at the right time. So under Krishna's direction, the spiritual master is also managing very nicely. So if we serve one who's a perfect manager, we cannot fail, because temporarily we may be unsuccessful, but we will succeed. And what is success? It does not necessarily mean calculating how big we did or how much we did in quantity, but the quality of our devotion is what will succeed. When Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati sent his men out, his disciples, to distribute books, sometimes they were unsuccessful materially. One boy came back having distributed one book, and Srila Bhakti Siddhanta, one magazine. He said to him, "Oh, you're so nice, you're so nice." Because he tried his best to serve the order of the spiritual master. And the measure of his success was the spiritual master was pleased. Krishna was pleased. That's the ultimate measure of our success. Krishna is trying to see how hard we're trying. So sometimes it seems that we're not successful, but if we work with great dedication and devotion, with our mind and heart dedicated to executing the order of the spiritual master, that is success. That is the measure of our success.